Hello, world. My name is Don, and you're watching Showcase for the week ending Sunday, April 10, 2022. Stop the presses. This is our Sunday show, and that means weird headlines with your live chat comments. With me tonight is Miss Kiara Douglas. Hey, Kiara, good to see you once again. How are you feeling tonight?
Good. How are you?
Doing all right. Thanks. Yeah, it's been a while since you were last with us on one of these shows. You've been doing all right overall?
Good. I'm good.
Cool. Awesome. And thank you at home for joining us as well. Don't forget to hit that like button and the subscription bell. And as always, if you're with us live, drop us a line in the live chat and we might read it off on the air. So let's go ahead and get started with weird news headlines. First order of business. This is from the Mirror. Will Smith slapping Chris Rock immortalized in ink on tattoo lover's leg. Let me go ahead and start this timer really quickly. Here we go. 5 minute hourglass timer so we don't run over. So here we go. The moment that Will Smith slapped Chris Rock at this year's Oscar ceremony has been immortalized as a tattoo lover got a frame from the video inked on his leg. It was the moment that defined the event on March 28th, and since then, a video of the incident has been shared far and wide. John Arden, age 36, is a tattoo artist working in Birmingham, and he was approached by a customer who said they wanted to get a tattoo to remember the moment. John thought that was hilarious, so together they decided which frame from the video the anonymous customer wanted, and soon they had it immortalized in ink on their leg. And there we go.
Oh, wow.
I mean, yeah, Kiara, what's your first reaction to this?
The frame could be a little bit bigger. But that's like actually a good, decent tattoo.
Yeah, like I can imagine. See, friends of mine who have had a lot of work done, a lot of tattoo work done, like they will unhesitatingly tell you like how painful it is, like depending on the details and the level of like ink that has to be put down. Oh my goodness, I have no idea how much time it took to do this, but oh my goodness, that's a lot of ink that had to be put on for that. That must have been excruciating. Kiara, where does this rank in like the weirdest tattoos for you, do you think?
It's not necessarily weird. That's just a lot of audacity. Like art is subjective, but like you don't even know them and you weren't even there, but you want it somewhere on your body. I guess, go off.
I guess, yeah. That's probably, that's one way to put it, definitely.
It's a waste of money.
Let's see. John, who completed the tattoo on Sunday, April 3rd, said, "I thought, let's do it. It's hilarious. Da, 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 da. It's a weird, interesting, and crazy thing. I don't think there's a right or wrong side. It's just an interesting thing some celebrities have done." What? Hit each other on the Oscar stage? We're calling that interesting now. That's an unexpected adjective to put there, but okay. By the way, just for those of you watching on our YouTube feed, the links to all of our sources are in the description, so you can see the quotes verbatim for yourself there. We are not making that up. Do not adjust your televisions. But anyway, moving on to the next item. Once again, thanks so much for joining us live. Those of you who are with us on YouTube as well as on Instagram, we are live there as well at Weekend Showcase. Let's go ahead and keep rolling into the next topic. Here we are. This is again from the Mirror. Fisherman finds odd creature out at sea that people think is a baby dragon. Okay. Let's see. Da, 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 da. A fisherman landed a strange catch when he was fishing deep at sea. And after sharing a picture of it online, his followers were freaked out. There we go. As some thought it was a baby dragon. Roman Fedortsov has found some strange things before, including a mushroom-like orange creature, an aggressive-looking anglerfish, and another catch that resembled a donut. And now he shared his latest find, a small fish that's longer than it is wide, and which his followers on social media describe as looking like a baby dragon. He pulled it from the water when he was fishing in the Norwegian Sea, and after sharing an image of his catch online, his followers have been left terrified. Wow. Face only a mother could love right there. Like, that looks like eyes right there in the center. Good grief. Kiara, what's your take?
The ocean is a scary place. And you truly do not know what's in it. I don't know what that is. But that's why I don't, you got to mind your business with some things. That coming from the ocean.
Yeah.
It does look like a dragon? Maybe it does a dragon. That's just.
I'm pretty sure not even Hiccup could train that thing. I don't know about that. Like, it's funny because I think last week we were discussing some weird footage that somebody was, some Scottish guy, I think, was claiming was the first, like, conclusive video evidence of the existence of the Loch Ness dragon or the Loch Ness monster. Mm-hmm. And it was this weird sort of, like, shadowy thing that was, like, just some weird sort of, like, imperfection in the footage. You couldn't really make out anything really clear from it, but it's, it's one of those things you pretty much have to chalk up to sort of hearsay and, like, you know, you can't really claim that that's what it is, but... This thing, I mean, goodness, pretty sure not even Ripley would believe that. Let's move on. Let's see. We have a comment from YouTube. Oh, that thing is ugly in all capital letters. Wow. Yeah, that's definitely true. Let's go ahead and move on. Let's see. Next topic. I'm trying to go from the bottom to the top. Here we go. Man gobsmacked after a new boss fires him for asking innocent question about wage. Okay. Let's see. The anonymous man posted a supposed text message exchange with his former boss on Reddit, according to the Daily Mail. The screenshot appeared to show him asking how often he'd get paid, which his employer said was bi-weekly. The man, who applied to be a children's tutor, followed up by asking for the date of his first payday, but this appeared to cross a line. He began, quote, I changed my mind. I would hire someone whose desire is to work with the company. Let me see. Hang on. Now, if I remember right, this is like green is yourself. And then gray is the receiving party, I guess. Right. Is that usually how that works with iMessage? Yeah. This looks like iMessage.
Well, it's iMessage in the sense that you're texting somebody who has an Android.
Well,
because iMessage, if it was another iPhone, it'd be blue.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, okay, so I guess that, then he's white and then like the Android, the boss's phone is green. Anyway, let's see. I'm sorry, I don't understand. I do want to work with the company, but pay information is important for me to properly budget bills. And then the person says, no problem, you carry on. I'm looking for an individual who is willing to work with the flow, with the environment, but your priority is only pay. And I'm not looking for any candidates whose priority is only pay. You didn't ask me about any other staff, uniforms, etc. You've been only asking me pay, so I'm not interested in such a candidate. And then the response, my priority is tutoring, but I also have to be able to afford food and shelter.
I know that's right.
Yeah.
That's it. I know that's right.
I only asked about pay because I was so nervous at the interview that I forgot to, and my wife reminded me. My priority is helping children learn. I can't do that very well if I don't have money for gas, food, and shelter. Oh my goodness. Okay. And then Look at this. The context at the bottom of that last screen grab says he was fired then and there. Oh, right. See, this text exchange is toxic to me. This almost reminds me of the sort of exchange that would happen with like, how do I put this? With like an online dating sort of thing where you're sort of getting to know the person. And then like one side of the conversation asks like what might be sort of an innocent question, but it's worded awkwardly or susly, I guess, basically. So like the other person is kind of the receiving party is sort of off guard by it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you like sort of recover and course correct the conversation? But even if you do, this awkward thing has already happened. So how can you trust that the vibe of the conversation has really moved on past that? Like, Kara, does that sound familiar?
I think you just have to acknowledge it and move on. But like, this is an important question. Like, that's just capitalism being capitalism. If you hiring me, I'm gonna ask you how much I get paid. I don't know, that's right. He said, listen, I like tutoring, but you also have rent to pay. I also need to eat. Like,
absolutely.
And that's a red flag. I hope he got a better job. That's a whole red flag. If you can't tell me how much money I'm making without you trying to gaslight me into thinking I'm a terrible person, then I don't need to work there. I don't.
Definitely.
It's
not even over there. The rest of the story says the hiring party told him not to bother coming in for a shift at 3 p.m. that afternoon as they previously planned. Yeah, that is, God. And then the rest of it kind of like recounts what we already read off in the screen grab, I guess. But yeah, this is one of those like communication kind of issues, I guess. That's just a toxic conversation.
He tried to fire him underneath the insubordination, and I would have called HR.
Oh, definitely.
That's a definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go ahead and move on. Next topic is my brother refuses to go to my wedding as I asked him to cover his rude tattoo. I guess we're sort of going full circle back over to ink adjacent topics here tonight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Ahead of her special day, a bride-to-be claims to have asked her brother to keep a particularly naughty tattoo covered up during the ceremony and received a furious response. According to this unnamed woman, her brother has always had a pretty wild look, often switching up his haircut or color or getting a new piercing or tattoo. He's previously sported a mullet, buzz cut, and a mohawk, and she usually doesn't mind his out-there appearance at all, reasoning that it's his body and therefore his choice. However, she feels that one of his many tattoos may look a tad out of place at her picturesque beach wedding and had hoped that he would keep it hidden just for one day. I'm not sure what that is. I'll be brutally honest. It's hard to make out from that.
Is it his back?
Yeah, it's, or maybe like because of this publication, I guess maybe this publication standards and practices, like they can't show the full thing. So they just allude to like the top part of it, I guess. But like, this isn't really, it's kind of blurry.
Yeah, I don't know what it did.
I don't know. But anyway, talking to Reddit, the frustrated bride explained, quote, when he was in college, my brother drunkenly got a vagina tattooed on his chest. Wow. As it's a beach wedding, the groomsmen will be wearing slightly open button-down shirts, and so the tattoo will be visible. I asked if he'd be willing to cover for my wedding and got immediately offended, saying it's his body, his choice. He's now refusing to attend the wedding if he has to cover it. Okay. Man, this is one of those situations, like, you want to be respectful of the situation, you know. And then at the same time, I don't know.
I'm going to be devil's advocate.
Okay.
If essentially he doesn't have his whole chest open, then it wouldn't be a problem. Like, if you're saying the chest is slightly open, then maybe you wouldn't know that it's a vagina, depending on the tattoo. So, like, to be quite honest with you, he could still have his chest. He's not going to be shirtless.
So it's like, how far down?
Yeah.
So it's like if it goes to,
yeah, if it's slightly open, you know, if he's not showing his titties, then he's all right. I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
But like, also, I need to see the tattoo. You guys, it depends on how big the tattoo is. That's the real question. I get her. I understand. Because you're wild. Mm-hmm. You're wild. Out of all things you could have got on your chest, you are. You're bugging.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, if we're not fully exposed, then like, he could actually just, you know, be okay with, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. Like, this is one of those things that like, there's gotta be a way to compromise this one, you know, at the absolute least, in the sense of making sure that, you know, family can be there to support on your special day. That's all. I guess that's basically all that can be said about this, basically. Yeah, I see why they couldn't show that full thing. Good thing it didn't turn around.
And that's crazy.
It's like, good night, everybody. All right, let's move on to the next topic. Here we are. So this is from UPI. Inert World War II grenade found among potatoes at New Zealand factory. What?
It's very common.
Did you say that's common? You've heard of this before?
I've heard of, there have been many stories of grenades and other just military artillery that has been lost in World War II. Mm-hmm. That during reconstruction in different parts of the countries, you find them. Because they were, I mean, you know, the whole point of military is you hide all your secrets, but like, stuff that has been reconstructed, if you never went back to get whatever you left and you just left it there. Mm-hmm. Like, there have been places that have found bombs, IEDs, grenade launchers, like, it's there. And I'm pretty sure they still exist. It's just, yeah. I mean, even how World War II, how it ended and how throughout the whole, because that main war was, you know, secrecy on top of that. It's actually very common to find artifacts in World War II.
Wow, and so I am watching the wrong History Channel specials if that's the case, because this is the first time hearing of any of this.
Yeah. Oh, no. I've seen it. I've seen a couple of the articles here and there finding it. So, you know.
Wow, that's bizarre.
And the crazy part is like, if you mess around, that grenade would still probably explode.
Probably the same could be said of like, you know, mines that are left behind from World War One or something underwater. You know, those things have just been sitting there, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're duds after all these decades. Those things are probably still put like, hurt.
If you never go back to get what else you've had of your artillery, like then like what do you think is gonna happen? That's my other question. Like
putting wildlife at risk too.
Yeah, but
Workers at a Workers at a French fries factory in New Zealand discovered that an object that initially appeared to be a muddy potato on the conveyor belt turned out to be an inert training grenade dating back to World War II. I'm reminded of that scene from the first Captain America movie where, Tommy Lee Jones throws out a grenade onto the training platform and like, grenade! And then like turns out to be a deliberate dud. It's like, oh, so this is what happened with that grenade after Steve got up. Night shift employees at the Mr. Chips factory in East Tamaki, an Auckland suburb, said 28 tons of russet potatoes were delivered to the facility from a farm in Matamata. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. But Richard Tarukura was monitoring the conveyor belt at the potato reception area of the factory when he investigated what he thought could be a muddy potato or an oddly shaped stone. Tarukura cleaned some of the mud from the object and showed it to a coworker who said it appeared to be a grenade. Roland Spatales, the factory's operation manager, told stuff.co.nz, quote, "It looked very much like a muddy potato originally. The guys were really calm and collected, and they reacted in an extremely professional manner," end quote. Wow. So this is, see, now I'm looking at this image and looking at this like a Where's Waldo sort of thing, where it's like you got to like sort of, one of these things is not like the others. One of these could very easily be an inert training grenade from like 80 years ago. I don't know. Kiara, any last thoughts on this before we move on?
I think that's cool. I would, you know, I'd mess around and keep the grenade. That's what I would do.
But YouTube comment, grenade among potatoes? Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at least nobody died.
Well, it was an error. I guess they didn't know from looking.
That don't mean because like, if it was me and that's me coming to work every day, I'd probably, you know, do my job and just throw potatoes. And then one of them is not a potato. And then we end up dying. So
yeah. Unpleasantness. Ugh. Let's move on. Thanks so much for joining us live. Those of you who are with us on YouTube or on Instagram at Weekend Showcase, don't forget to drop a chat in the comment feed and we might incorporate your feedback into our conversation. And don't forget to smash that like button, the notification bell. Let's move on to, I think we have a few left. Oh, we have quite a few left. Let's see. This is back over on the mirror again. Stan the flying dog, okay, has no fear paragliding with owner and just enjoys the view. This sounds like something that should have a YouTube clip attached to it. Let's take a look. Hang on. Flip that around. All right. Yay, there's a video.
Video loading.
Load. Say again.
Video loading.
Yeah. I didn't catch the accent. Man, it doesn't look like that's going to load. Shoot. Oh, well. Well, like I was saying earlier, we have the links for all these stories in the description of this video down below if you want to check it out later. But here we go. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's Stan the flying dog paragliding through the sky. Adventure-loving Stan, quote, doesn't like being indoors for too long, end quote. And instead prefers to jump from cliffs with his owner, Alex Colbeck, 34, from North Yorkshire. I guess that's who they're quoting there. The six-year-old miniature schnauzer has his own custom-made doggy harness that allows him to see spectacular views from high up. There you go. Sunglasses optional. Let's see. The daredevil pup isn't afraid of heights and loves people watching, though often gets a little too excited midair when he sees squirrels. Alex said, quote, "I thought that riding in a car, boat, or other transport must be equally strange for a dog, so why not try paragliding?" End quote. Yeah. Man, this definitely takes it up a notch, or several, I guess, from that stereotypical dogs always love to like put their head out the window of a car, that sort of thing. But then it's like, this reminds me of like, why do dogs even do that? You know, like I've always kind of like wondered that, you know, like do their faces always get like overheated the most, I guess, because like dogs don't have sweat glands. So like, that's why they're panting all the time. But is that like the best, most efficient way to, I guess, cool their heads off, is just to like, anytime they have the opportunity to get in front of a strong breeze, do it?
I don't know. I think maybe it's just because, I don't know, it's fun to stick your head out of a window. I don't know. I don't have that answer. That could be a scientific reason. I mean, dogs have a lot of hair, so they're always hot. So I don't know.
That's valid. Have you ever stuck your head out of the window just for a split second, just to like see what it's like?
I used to do it all the time when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I gotta confess, like, I actually tried that like a couple of times. I had to get sometimes I use these kinds of sunglasses, this kind of design, but I also had years ago, I used this wraparound style of sunglasses. That was the only way that I could do it, so that like air wouldn't slip in past the sides of the of the lenses and like mess with my eyes. So like, that was the only way to do it. I had to practically have goggles on to do that. But yeah,
it's cool. I mean, it's not. I like sticking my head out the sunroof. That's my game.
Well, like this?
Yeah, but like, do that because you'll die. I got told. Yeah, no, it's a real thing. So I was like, okay. Because like the way that gravity works, you know, in physics, like if you really go at a certain force, like you'll behead yourself. It's a real thing. But
okay, we're gonna go ahead and put that in the category of not covering that this week. I suppose. So let's see. Here we go. Alex, an IT contractor, continued, quote, Stan is used to being around paragliders launching and landing, so the sights and sounds don't faze him. I introduced him to his harness, which securely fastens to my own harness, on a few occasions before he went flying. Then on his first flight, I clipped him in and off we went. I was watching him closely and praising him the whole time during the flight, and I could not see any sign of fear or anxiety, end quote. Well, I mean, at that point, the dog is along for the ride no matter what, so.
Shout out to Stan.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's true, too.
I aspire to be like Stan.
Is that the beginning of a hashtag now? Hashtag be like Stan?
Hashtag be like Stan.
There you go. You heard it here first, folks. We're going to start a new hashtag here. let's go ahead and move on. The next topic on the docket here. Let's see. Once the list fully populates here on my screen, here we are. Okay, next item is driver rescued after car gets stuck atop trash compactor in Maine. Holy crap. Just this picture alone is like, how does that even happen? Hang on a second. Let's start here. How in the world does this even happen? Are you seeing this right now?
Yeah. I don't know.
That's wrong turn at Albuquerque. Good grief. Let's see. The East Millinocket Police Department said police responded alongside personnel from the Millinocket Fire Department on a report of a driver stranded in a vehicle that was stuck over a trash compactor at the Millinocket transfer station. The driver was unable to get out of the vehicle because their door was directly above the trash compactor's opening, police said. Firefighters were able to rescue the driver, who was not injured, and the responders were then able to remove the vehicle with help from Bouchard and Sons Towing. Okay. Let me see. I don't see any other information down here. Presumably the driver is okay now, but wow. It doesn't say anything about how in the world this happened. This is one of those, see, I gotta say, I don't like stories like this, or at least stories that are presented like this, because this is one of those things that it just glosses over so many details. Where was the driver drunk? Like, well, what?
Hold on, scroll down more. Scroll down again.
Oh, okay. Made a wrong turn at the garbage dump. Okay, there you go. But yeah. Like, let me see. What else? What are you looking for?
Isn't there the option to read more right there?
This is no, I can't click on it. There are other stories down here that are totally irrelevant. So like, that's what that is. It just goes down to other things from there, ads and stuff.
Well, you made a wrong turn. So
at Albuquerque, as it were,
we made a wrong turn.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I don't know. Cause this just feels like one of those things that, like, good grief. I don't know, maybe like absolutely all else fails, like this could be a thing where like, hey, you can make a wrong turn resulting in an incident like this, and like, okay, the front left side of the bumper kind of needs to be put back in place, but remarkably low damage to the car considering. Considering. Well, just don't open up the compactor. I don't know.
Like, because if you take the car out, first of all, his tires are gone.
Well,
I think it's considered a total car. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can get like a salvage title and it can still like go, you know, depending on the extent of the damage and the extent of what it would cost to repair the damage.
I mean, I hope he has good insurance.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how the insurance company feel about that.
Yeah, no, this definitely can't be filed under like, you know, act of nature, act of God, I think is what it's called, technically speaking, in insurance terms. Yeah. So, anyway, all right, let's move on. Once again, thanks so much to those of you who are tuned in live via Instagram at Weekend Showcase or at our main place at YouTube here. Let's go ahead and move on to the next topic. This is from the Mirror again. My husband wants to name our baby after a serial killer. Why?
A lot of people do that. Well, that's like
why
people have, you know, they like, if they really appraise serial killers, they in memory of Momentum.
Memory of a serial killer? Are you serious right now?
I've heard people have done that with Ted Bundy. There have been women who named their kids after Ted Bundy.
Is that supposed to be better? Is his case supposed to be better?
It's not. It's just, you know, it's the whole, depending on the serial killer, it's like you think they're iconic for what they did, whether it's bad or a good thing. It's like people naming their kids after celebrities.
No, it's not. Celebrities don't kill people. Well, we'll see what happens with Alec Baldwin. So a mom-to-be has revealed her husband's idiotic name suggestion for their baby. In a post on Reddit, the anonymous woman, 35, explained that she and her husband, 37, are expecting their first child. Having struggled with infertility and miscarriage in the past, they are, quote, overjoyed, end quote, to say they are finally going to be parents. They had planned to wait till the birth to find out the gender, but a disagreement over the baby's name may mean they have to find out early. Recently, her husband's granddad, who he absolutely idolized, passed away, and understandably, he is devastated. She explained, quote, as such, my husband has suggested that we name the baby after Grandpa, Theodora if it's a boy, Theodora if it's a girl. Either way, we will call them Teddy or Theo, Thea, respectively. End quote. Oh, yep. Here we go. The mom-to-be has no qualms with these names.
Go ahead, continue reading. But this is what I mean. Go ahead, continue.
You already read ahead? All right.
Yeah.
The mom-to-be has no qualms with these names, but when it's paired with their last name, that there's an issue. She revealed, quote, the issue is that our last name is spelled B-O-U-N-D-E, pronounced Bundy.
I told you, man.
I asked my husband, do you really see no issue in naming our kid Teddy Bundy? You don't think that would raise any questions? End quote. And it goes into detail. For those who don't know Ted Bundy, he was an American serial killer who kidnapped, raped, and murdered numerous young women and girls during the 1970s, which explains why the mom wouldn't want her child linked to him. Her husband didn't see the issue, though.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. It's a common thing.
But
it's no different than people who make like Instagram and fan pages of serial killers. Like, listen, if that's not a mental illness, I don't know what is. But listen, it's a common thing. It's not the first time I've heard of people doing that. Like people literally, they do that because they think it's like cool, you know?
What? But so what's another example of something that you've heard of?
Like, even with Charles Manson, like during his, well, you know, and Charles Manson, that man, you know, he was creative in how he's considered a serial killer, even though he didn't really kill anybody by textbook definition. But like during his whole, during his trial and praise, like a lot of women, they love that man. They want to have kids with him. And when they had children, you had people like fighting for his case, thinking that he was innocent, and they named their kids after him.
Wow. That explains why we always have all these true crime documentaries that are always like top 10 or top 5 viewed or whatever, like, it is on Netflix.
Even with Ted Bundy, like you had a bunch of women writing letters to him in jail and oh, I want to have your baby. I mean, his wife, the woman that he married, that was the woman, she was against him and called him a killer. And then somewhere in the trial and case, when they started writing letters, she fell in love with him, you know? So it's not that far off. It really isn't. Like, and it depends on the killer. Usually it's serial killers who are so good looking that because you're attractive, that is the excuse and really the glass that you use to say, oh, well, he's not that harmful of a person because somebody that good looking really can't be that dangerous, which is truly psychotic, but go off. You know,
we have some comments from YouTube. We have a Marshall saying it, writing in, she's cute, talking about the baby in the picture, I guess. I can't tell what this is. Fidele, Fidel. And then Cordone, Cordone. I don't know what those comments are in reference to. Sorry. Yeah. If you're still here, like, you know, please be a little bit more specific what your comment or question is there. We're not clear on that. Kiara, go on. It sounds like you were talking about basically like handsome serial killers, I guess.
Yeah, like serial killers, like famously known serial killers, like even with Ted Bundy in his case, like the reason why he's so iconic is that the way that he was portrayed throughout his trial and his whole story is that you didn't focus on the violence of what he did to these women. You literally said this man is too good looking and too educated to kill people. Like, you're more interested in physical attributions and the fact that of his background and his looks, and that overshadows the fact that that man was a demented person that was out here killing and raping women for his own enjoyment. Like, it just goes to show the play on media. Like, even people knew what he did. And you still, because he's so good looking, or, you know, I guess of his face and his charm, like that's the excuse. And you want to name your kid after it. It's what you think is edgy, and it's not. Because, like, the crazy part is like when you name your kid a name that you think is cool, your kid has to live with that. You only
get at least until the child is old enough to change their own name.
Yeah, but that's a lot of money and that's a lot of paperwork. And not everybody got stacks like that to just change your whole identity. But you doing that and the intention behind that, like, that matters. And you look stupid doing that because you have, you know, you're enamored by somebody. Not even a good person. I don't understand. He don't deserve to be a father. Cancel him. I don't know.
Cancel the husband? Cancel the husband in this story? Is that what you're saying?
I would divorce you. You have problems.
Wow. Have
problems. We need to go to therapy. We need to have a talk. We need to have a chat.
Wow, that's there's Ms. Kiara swiping left on that entire conversation right there. Let's move on to the next topic and move along. Let's see. Next item is from the Mirror again. Mom left in tears as kids smear black paint all over newly decorated house.
Ooh, no. Oh, no.
Wow. So a mom was left in tears after discovering her two mischievous children had completely wrecked their newly decorated bungalow after cracking open a pot of black B&Q paint. I almost said barbecue. B&Q. Carrie Jones and her partner, Callum Sheriff Johnson, his middle name is Sheriff? Wow. Have spent more than 4,000
pounds.
Is that pounds? Mm-hmm. Okay, decorating their home after moving back in October and were therefore dismayed to see the damage inflicted by their daughter's creative art project. On the morning in question, Carrie was awoken by the sound of Callum yelling, "Get up!" before quickly realizing that little Lacey Ray, age 4, and Eliza Sky, age 2, had ruined the whole house with their artistic endeavors. Footage taken by the gobsmacked 22-year-old mom shows black footprints leading from the corridor into the living room where the walls are covered with tiny handprints.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Wow. Wow. So.
Huh?
Wow. That's that's a bit much. Yep, handprints. This reminds me of that scene from the prequel to Dumb and Dumber. Did you ever see Dumb and Dumber-er?
I don't think so.
That was the Dumb and Dumber movie that didn't involve Jim Carrey or Jeff Daniels. It was two different actors they had brought in to portray those two characters in high school. Mm-hmm. And there's this scene where, like, it wasn't paint, it was fecal matter, and it was like just sprayed all over like the inside of a bathroom. And the dad walks in. I'm trying to remember, I think it was Bob Saget was the dad in that this girl they were talking to's dad in that film, and he reacted basically as one would expect from just like walking in, and the whole room is top to bottom, it's like a coating of just random smatterings of number two. At least this is paint, but that's just what this reminds me of here. Let's see. Talking to Facebook, I'm gonna skip down a little bit more. The full-time mom jokingly offered to give her children away as they ruin everything and think the house is an art gallery, having now destroyed her couch, carpet, rug, and four-month-old kitchen lino. Sure about that. She and Callum are particularly worried about their 500-pound corner sofa, which they fear is now damaged beyond repair. Wow. Okay. That's a bit much there. Black handprints all over the wall. So parenting moment, Kira, like how would you deal with this? Hypothetically.
You know, here's the thing. Because I saw this on the internet.
Uh-oh. Okay.
No, listen. Because like children at that age, it really is a creative outlet. So it's something that should not be shamed, because like, you know, you have kids who tap into artistry very young. And for them, if they see a blank canvas, then that's what they want to do. Like I've seen countless videos of parents, like their kids will draw on the wall and then they just turn that wall into a mural, which mm-hmm. I think is cool. However, actions do have consequences. My number one question is, how did they get into the paint? It's a really good question, because you're 4 and 2. So cognitive skills and you guys can barely talk. I don't know. I feel like with this, I mean, there's no way that they can clean it. I feel like you should, you know, talk to them and make them paint over the wall. As for the furniture, there's really nothing you can do about that. But they're children, like, you know, the 4-year-old is the one who probably initiated this, because the 2-year-old doesn't know what they're doing. They're 2.
They sort of like going along for the ride of what Big Sis was doing. Presuming it was like, we don't know who instigated it. That's the other thing.
We don't know who initiated it. 2-year-olds, they just realize like they exist in the world. Like there's not many 2-year-olds who have that type of cognitive awakening.
Yeah.
You know, they're 2. But a 4-year-old, sure. But you know, I would make them like paint the wall, but for the furniture, I mean, there's really not much you can do about it. Like, you know, you're just gonna have to take that elegant furniture. That's really what it is. Like, but I think it's something that should be talked about. I feel like I would keep the wall and just use that as a mural. That's just me and my 2-cent opinion. Because they're gonna do it again. It's not the last time to do it. So, you know, but I feel bad because they're newly parents and they put a lot of money into that, and that hurts. Like, I can understand being furious and wanting to beat your kid.
The mom says, quote, "You can see the handprints on the couches and its blackness from underneath it. If we can't get it off, throws aren't going to cover it. My daughter was doing handprinting in school. She clocked on and thought she could do the wall. I couldn't believe she was able to open the paint. I was gobsmacked. Well, I was furious, but they're children and they don't understand, so you can't go mad at them. My children are my life, so I wouldn't scream and go mad at them. I held it all in. Before I posted the video on Facebook, I sat on my couch and I cried for about 10 minutes, then realized my tears aren't going to clean this up. Once we got the girls clean, we watched the videos back and cried with laughter and the girls' faces in it. Lacey Raid looked like she was saying, 'This is just our artwork, Mom.'"
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, and for quotes. Them, like, it's arts and craft. Like, and that's the hard part, because like, you really can't, if she was like 8 or 9, sure, totally different story. But really, this is just exploratory territory. If that's what you learned in school, you're going to take that with home, and you think that you can do that at home. Like, it's the honest truth. I hope that they, you know,
I hope learn somebody from this.
Learn from it, and maybe somebody in the bottom of their heart might cash out the money to give them a new, but like, you know, their kids. That's the risk that you have with children.
They don't come with a warning label or an instruction manual. No. And like when you start a family, these are things that you have to sort of prepare yourself for at a not just at an emotional level, but at a psychological level, the capacity you have to have for holding it in when your child inevitably does something that royally causes damage. You know, like it's you're not, you can never really be prepared for that, but you love your kids. So,
but I would keep the wall. I would keep the wall.
We have two left, and then we got to shut this down. Next item is from the mirror. Adorable puppy becomes best friends with kittens and sleeps next to them. I wouldn't put this as weird so much as another like awe kind of thing, you know?
Well, it's all because the whole dogs don't like cats and cats don't like dogs. That's all.
Yeah, but this isn't Tom and Jerry. I mean, you know, I mean, at a certain point, well, anyway, let's see. It starts off like that. This adorable friendship between a puppy and a trio of rescue kittens proves that people needn't fight like cat and dog. There you go. 1-year-old pup Popsy has always got on with cats and kittens, but this bond was like no other. Owner Catherine Walsh, age 60, from Wapping, London, regularly fosters for the animal charity Battersea and has taken in several sets over the years. But when she took rescue kittens Fawn, Hera, and Ralph into her home on March 14, she was shocked by their reception. The four friends instantly became inseparable and did everything together, from playing to eating and sleeping. There you go.
That's nice.
Yeah. The cute pictures show just some of the precious moments the unusual gang shared together before the kittens eventually had to return to the rescue shelter last week. And there you go. There's your daily recommended dosage of
serotonin.
Cat footage. Yeah, serotonin. Sure, there you go. Hashtag serotonin. Hashtag be like, what was the dog's name again? Remember. Sam? I don't remember. Crud. We'll have to like go back and revisit that before this shuts down, hopefully. Anyway, Popsy isn't the only dog to have formed an unlikely friendship this week. Ted, the farm dog, has stepped in to help feed orphaned lambs. The black Labrador jumped at the opportunity to balance the bottle of milk between his teeth while 6-year-old lamb Frank suckled. What? That feels like this. We're going to go like too far into like a rabbit hole if I like click on that link, but the links are, I guess that's probably linking to a different story that's talking about this particular instance separately from what we got linked to here with the first puppy. But we have links for this and all the other stories we've discussed tonight in the description of this video right down below on YouTube. So if you're inclined to click further into that, feel free. Let's go ahead and move on. I think we have like one or two more tonight here before we gotta shut this thing down. Last one. Okay. Teenagers message in a bottle seeking boyfriends found after 56 years. Wow. Interesting. I guess don't tell grandpa that like grandma's message from like, imagine if that was like the, hang on a second. Let me go ahead and actually read this before we like start taking it apart. Hang on. Members of the Scunthorpe Litter Pickers group said they found the message in a bottle while cleaning up around the Humber Estuary in South Ferriby, North Lincolnshire, England. The group members opened the bottle and found a note written by 15-year-old friends Jennifer Coleman and Janet Blankley. The letter, dated August 9, 1966, asked any single boys over the age of 16 and under the age of 18 to write back. Wow. Tracy Marshall, a member of the litter picking crew, was able to find Coleman on Facebook. Coleman, who moved to Australia after finishing school, said the location where the bottle was found was only a few yards from where she and Blankley launched it. Coleman told the BBC, quote, "I think it must have gone out a little way and then came in on the next tide," end quote. Coleman said she isn't in touch with Blankley anymore, but she was absolutely amazed to learn their letter had been found. Marshall said the discovery was a first for the Scunthorpe litter pickers. She said, quote, "We found all sorts of weird and wonderful things when we're litter picking, but we've never ever found anything on this scale. It's just brilliant," end quote. Wow. So, yeah, like I was saying, definitely. Here's a YouTube video. But before that, Kira, what's your reaction to this?
I think it's sweet. You know, it's crazy because like, writing letters and communication, specifically like back in those times, like there was a lot of people who had a lot of secret relationships and you would never know because like technology didn't exist. So it really was a sign of the times if you were in love and you could keep a secret. I see stories like this sometimes on the internet, you know, like people who find letters and lock boxes and stuff like that. Treasure is definitely a story. It's something that
hang on 1 second. Sorry, I think something sort of like almost interrupted the stream right there. Can you still see me?
You're frozen.
Yeah, shoot. Oh, well. But you can still hear me.
Yes.
Okay. That's very strange. Yeah, I can see on the bottom of the screen it's kind of frozen, but like the main video is still able to record at least. So that's something. Oh, geez. Yeah, we're having some technical difficulties right now. I don't know how well we'll be able to salvage this in post-production, but like, yeah, this live stream is pretty much kind of doing what it's going to do right now. Let's go ahead and shut this thing down because this is the last video. Oh, wait a minute. I almost forgot this. Did you want to check out this video really quickly? Or, I mean, this is linked in the description. We can just go ahead and yank it here.
When you send a message in a bottle, you imagine it will wash up on a desert island or some distant land. But that wasn't the case for Jennifer Coleman from Grantham. While visiting family in North Lincolnshire in the 1960s, Jennifer threw the bottle into the Humber estuary that was finally discovered this weekend.
Wow, that's the best find we've ever had.
We find all sorts of weird and wonderful things when we're litter picking, but we've never ever found anything along this scale. It's something that's been in the water for 50 years. We find all sorts of weird and wonderful things when we're litter picking, but we've never ever found anything along this scale. It's something that's been in the water for 56 years.
Can you still hear this?
Hang on. We're very excited.
Tracy managed to track down Jennifer, who ended up emigrating to Australia.
You know what? That's fine. Yeah, this isn't very stable right now. It's fine. We already basically read through this thing. It doesn't look like there's anything really new of consequence in here, but I just got to say really quickly, before we like get out of this particular topic, I think, is this like the beginning of like, what is it? You know, those like Craigslist ads, or not Craigslist ads, those things that sometimes like people will post in like personals. That's what I'm trying to say. Like personal ads, you know, like, you know, that sort of thing. No.
What do you mean personal ads?
Well, because that's basically what the message was. It was asking for like this was a couple of teenage girls trying to find other teenage some teenage boys.
It's like on Twitter when people like take a picture of a stranger and they're like, I need you guys to help me find this person. Da, 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 da. Yeah.
Like the missed opportunities thing on Craigslist, the missed networking.
Yeah.
So it's like, man, like I was trying to say in the beginning, like, don't tell grandpa that we found grandma's thirst trap message in a bottle.
I don't know.
I mean, but
Shoot your shot. Even in those times,
shoot your shot. Yeah, there it is. That's like that's the 1960s teenager equivalent of shooting your shot, basically, I guess. Anyway, all right, let's go ahead and back out of this and shut this puppy down. I'm trying to remember what was the name of that, the parachuting dog that we were talking about earlier. Sam. Those were the two hashtags that we were discussing.
Hashtag tonight. Be like,
what was it, Sam?
Stan.
Hashtag there it is. Yeah, I see it here. Okay, so it's hashtag be like Stan, and then hashtag serotonin was the other hashtag that we are introducing tonight. There you go. So before we shut down, Kiara, what was your favorite story tonight?
I'm going to say probably the dude with the chest tattoo, you know.
The chest tattoo that we couldn't see?
Yeah, I want to know what the job of employment is. I need to know.
Okay.
Risky choice, but I respect it, you know. He stuck with it.
I gotta say, like the trash compactor car thing was like the most amusing thing for me. Like that was just too crazy, basically. You know, it frustrated me the way that it was reported, but presumably the the driver got out of that okay. Between that and the World War II grenade, those were my two biggest ones tonight. But those of you at home, what were your favorite stories for tonight, for this week? Drop a comment down below to continue the conversation and visit any of our social pages. We're at Weekend Showcase everywhere, including at TikTok. Those of you who are active there, don't forget to drop by there. We're getting pretty active over there now. We pulled in like something 17, 18,000 views, like literally just, you know, within the last several days, few days. So definitely might want to check that out if you're active there. And we will see you right here. Same bad time, same bad channel. Actually, a little bit later, excuse me, on Friday, because our Friday shows were a little later. Friday, we're live again at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 Pacific for another new trailer reaction show. Hope to see you then. And thank you, Kiara, for joining me tonight.
Anytime.
Cool, anytime. Cool. And thank you at home for watching. For now, be safe and hope you had a great weekend. Showcase you later. Good night.
Bye, guys.